Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the V2 Academy. I'm Chris Lappin, and joining me I've got Peter Pickett. How you doing this evening, Peter?
Very good, thanks. Good evening, everyone.
Just shortly you'll be joined by former England under-21 international and current Middlesbrough Academy coach Mark Tinkler. Before that, we thought we'll quickly discuss how to deal with troublesome players. So Peter, how do you deal with players who don't listen and train?
Sometimes the problem isn't that they're not listening.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The problem is that you're talking too much.
All right. Okay.
So it could be that they're not listening because you're actually being really boring. Or you're talking about things that they don't think are relevant.
Yeah.
You're just simply talking for too long. And something I think that I'm guilty of forgetting and other coaches are guilty of forgetting is that actually attention spans have shrunk,
yeah.
Not just of kids, but of adults as well. I think we'll find it with our podcasts, when they're over a certain length, people start to drop out,
yeah.
Because there's only so long that people can seem to focus on things anymore. And I think that goes with the kids as well. If we're talking for too long, then we've got a problem. Sometimes, though, you can end up talking for too long because of interruption, and what you're saying is being disrupted by the players. There have been a number of times where what I have tried to say would have been a minute and a half.
Yeah.
But because of interruption, it's ended up taking 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And that can be tricky.
So could one of the causes of being disruption not only be boredom, but a talented player might find the drills or training not challenging enough?
Sometimes a player can feel that they know it already.
Yeah.
Depending on that player's mindset, you might be able to say to the player, I know you can do this, but this is an opportunity for you to just fine-tune it.
Mm-hmm.
While other players, this might be the first time that they even attempt it, but for you, this is an opportunity to just prove it, make it better, make it stick further. But some of them will go, I can do this. So you might need to set them a different challenge.
Hmm.
It's a conversation I had with a coach at my club recently, and they said, but the players need to move up, and we need to separate them so we've got those that are a similar quality so they can push along at the same rate. And my response was, no, you as a coach need to be able to differentiate.
Yeah.
So you should be able to spot which player is pushing ahead and set them a different challenge, a different task, without taking away from the group's overall task.
So what do you think the major ways to motivate and possibly handle talented but difficult players?
It can depend on the player's character.
Yeah.
So different things motivate different people and different kids. Some are motivated by a challenge, by a task that is difficult for them, and they're motivated by the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Others are motivated by success. So if it's something that they keep winning, that actually motivates them, the fact that they are winning, while others will be briefly motivated like they're winning, and then they'll go, this is too easy.
Yeah.
I want something harder. So like many things, in the end, it comes down to knowing your players and what your player likes and what your player doesn't like and that character. That can be very tough as a grassroots coach because you may see them once a week for training and then once during the game. Sometimes you might not see them that much. So getting to know what motivates that individual can be a tough ask. And the other thing is that might actually change as they get older. They might become motivated by other things. As they get older, the motivation might be friendship and their peers. So actually what might motivate a kid is that their mate is doing it.
Yeah.
Their friend might be able to do 20 keep-ups and they can only do 10. So can you do more than your mate? And there might be that element of competition or friendly rivalry that motivates them. It all depends on that person's character.
Mm.
And that is very difficult to know, particularly difficult to know quickly. It takes time to form that sort of relationship.
So, I don't really want to say punishment, but how have you ever had to possibly exclude a player from training, or how do you go about it these days? Because I remember when I was a kid, you used to punish the whole group, so it'd be a bit peer pressure to get make somebody behave. But I'm sure it's not like that anymore.
I see coaches still doing right. Okay, you stepped out of line, laps.
Yeah.
Doing laps, which is something I despise because I don't think it's constructive. And there's also a subtle psychological message being sent out there, which is physical activity is a punishment.
Yeah.
So if they have that in their head, that the physical activity is a punishment, as they get older, they'll want to avoid physical activity.
Mm.
Because, you know, much like some people may, when they leave home, go, yes, great, I don't have to eat my greens anymore.
Mm.
I can eat all the sweets I like now, that yeah. sort of thing. So sending people on laps is not something I do, and it's not something I'd encourage. Timeouts are always something that can happen, but after a while they lose their effect. And punishment, ultimately, probably isn't the solution.
No.
The solution is normally going to be some form of consensus and understanding that helps you to go move forward. Having said that, there have been times where I've reached a point with certain players where what they're doing, despite conversations, despite efforts to smooth things over, their actions have become detrimental to the group as a whole.
Mm.
And you don't want to exclude players. You don't want to be the person who says no more, but then you have to start thinking about there's another 19 kids there, for example,
yeah.
or there's another 15 kids there, for example, versus the needs of this one. When do the needs of that number of players far outweigh this one boy or girl?
Yeah.
And then it becomes a very difficult situation. Get parents, you start talking to parents, the parent might be supportive of what you're trying to do, the parent may not be supportive of what you're trying to do, and that throws open a whole other set of issues. And I've come very close to having to say no more, but I've not yet done it.
Yeah.
I've normally found a way to solve it. But that's not to say I believe I'm always going to be able to find a solution, because I can see a scenario where that's not possible and actually the line has to be drawn. It's not a day that I look forward to, but I can see that there might be a possibility and there might be a time where that has to happen. But it is an absolute, total and utter last resort. It has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be the ultimate sanction.
You just gave me flashbacks to my PE lesson. 10 laps, bonehead. We're delighted to be joined on the line by Mark Tinkler. How are you doing this evening, Mark?
Yeah, very good, thanks, Chris. Really good.
I wanted to take you back to 1993, which seemed to be a great year for you. So, you were part of the England team that won the Under-18s Euro Championship?
Yeah, that's right, it was a great year for me, personally, but also for the lads that we played. Obviously, we won the FA Youth Cup that year. Then the lads, I think it was five of us, went on to play for England in the summer, and we won the European Championships with England in the 18s. But also that year, I think there was three or four of us made our debuts in the first team at Madrid. So it was a fantastic year for me and for some of the other boys as well in the team.
So what were your memories of the championships?
Just the crowds, really. I think everybody was... The stadiums were quite full, and obviously we didn't expect it. Obviously it was in England and it was a European championship, but we didn't expect it to be as full as they were, but everybody seemed to get behind the team around the Nottingham area. We had games at Walsall, which the fans turned out in force to support the lads. We had a really good team with good players, but also good lads who would work hard for each other and try their best to help each other out, really. Obviously, there was five of us from Leeds, and there was five United lads, I think there was. So it was a great time and some really good players and great lads as well, really.
So as being one of five Leeds players, it must have been amazing to celebrate it with your mates.
Yeah, it was great afterwards. Obviously, we weren't allowed to drink afterwards. We were back on there. We went for a meal after the actual final against Turkey. Then
yeah,
had a meal with all the players and the staff, and we had to get back to Leeds. Really, we were training the next day. We had to get a taxi back to our digs in Leeds and get back on the training field. I think it was the day after. It might have been 2 days after the final. Actually, we had a day after the following day, but we trained the next day. So it was straight back into it, really. But it was a great time. I think as a young player playing for your country, and no matter what age, and you win a major championship, it's fantastic, and it lives with you forever. So it was a fantastic time. And like I said before, you couldn't wish for a better group of players, really, and really good people and top players as well.
I was looking at it, it was a really good squad. Yeah, some of them went on to have some legendary careers. Was it Gary Neville, Sol Campbell, Paul Scholes, Robbie Fowler?
There was a few top players in the team who went on to have fantastic careers and fully deserved, really. Played in World Cups. Nicky Butt, who was a fantastic player. Like you said, Scholes, he's big, Sol, Gary, Robbie, they went on to have fantastic careers and playing World Cups and European Championships. At first team level, which was a great achievement from all five of them, really. So, but they were good lads. There was no egos amongst them, coming from Liverpool or coming from Man United or Spurs, where Sol was. There was no egos, just good lads who wanted to do well for each other, wanted to do well for the team. And it showed, because I would be working on the training ground as well, and they went on to have fantastic careers in the Premier League and for the national team, really.
Yeah, so you also won the, as you mentioned, the FA Youth Cup against your biggest rivals, Man United. Both leagues were played in front of 30,000 plus fans. Must have been an amazing week in your young career.
Yeah, it was. We were obviously at the time, Leeds had never won the FA Youth Cup before. Obviously, we had Paul Hart as a manager. It was a fantastic, fantastic manager, and somebody we all looked up to at the time. I've said it many times before. I think you look at Man United, and they probably had a bit more quality in the team as an overall team. But I think we had a lot of players who had a lot of commitment, a lot of desire, no selfishness amongst the lads. They would do anything for each other. And I think we did have some quality in the team. We had some good players as well, which helped us secure the win in the final. But I think the main thing was that the lads at the time who would just do anything for each other. And we had a great group, but. Great group of boys, really. It was a fantastic, fantastic team, I think, really, that we had.
Does it feel, retrospectively, a bigger achievement when you see what the careers of the United side went on to? So they had the Nevilles and Scholes and Beckham in their side.
I think at the time we had good players as well. Like I say, we had five who went into the England team as well. Obviously, the lads got the chance at United and they took it. I think we were the boys at Leeds, we in and out of the team. Really. We never really got a good run in the team. Even though Howard gave us our debuts when we were 18, we never really stamped our authority on the team. When the big, obviously, we had a fantastic midfielder that leads at the time. We had Gary Mack, Speedo, Bats, Strack, then we had Steve Yours, David Lowcastle, Scotty Sellers. So it was difficult to get in the team and stay in there, because if you did well, and the first team players come back from suspension or injury, they were back in the team, really. So
yeah.
It was difficult. But yeah, the lads who went on to United and you see Alex Ferguson give them their chance and they grasped it with both hands, really, and they went from strength to strength as a team, and obviously five or six of them played together for a lot of years at United, so that's a fantastic achievement from them players, really.
Hi Mark, very interesting listening to you talk about your playing career, and I was actually wondering, while you were playing, at what stage did you seriously start to consider becoming a coach?
To be honest with you, I never really considered until I was up at I went to Livingston for a year when I was 33, and Mark Proctor was a manager there, who was also at Middlesbrough as a player and a coach. And I know Dave Parnaby, who's the academy manager at Middlesbrough. He's been there nearly 20 years now, and Dave used to be my school teacher at school. So I got in touch with Dave, and he said, "Why don't you start doing your badges?" And so I started doing my badges really. And when I finished up with Livingston, I had to retire from the professional game because of my Achilles and stuff. So I come back down home and I went to see Dave, and I got my B license. And I went into the club as under 14 coach. So that's how it all really started really.
What's your current position at the academy?
It's professional development phase coach. So I work with mainly the under 18s, but it's classed as 17 to 21 development phase coach. But I work with the 18s on a daily basis really.
And Borough, fortunately, one of the academies that have historically had a really good record bringing players through. I mean, if you look back, there's always been academy players over the last 15, 20 years. Is that a deliberate policy from the club?
Yeah, I've been there 9 years now. I worked 4 years in the academy as a part-time coach, but when all EPP come in with categorising academies, I managed to get myself a full-time job at the club. So I've been there full-time last 5 years. And yeah, obviously knowing Dave and knowing the club and how the academy works, it's always been the philosophy to try and get our local players through into the first team. And like you said, we've done it really well over the last 15, 20 years. We've had all our teams that we've had since I've been at the club, we've been from the northeast of England. And it's different when we go and play like Man City, Chelsea, Man United at times. They have players from all over the world, really, all over Europe. They fetch you over to play in their academy teams and in their youth teams. So we try and work on the basis of getting recruiting our players from the northeast, hopefully from the Middlesbrough area or surrounding areas or the northeast. Obviously, we've got some in Newcastle as well who want players as well. That's how we want to produce local players for our team. And wherever we can, really. And like you said before, we've done that very well over the last 10, 15 years.
But you obviously believe, or the club obviously believe, that there's enough talent locally to not have to go fishing in other ponds.
Yeah, I think we do. I think obviously the chairman, Steve Gibson, he's a brother boy, and he loves the club, and he loves the area. And I don't think there's any greater pleasure than for the chairman seeing a homegrown player walk out on the pitch at the Riverside, really. So it's difficult going there as well. It's not easy, obviously, now with all the money in the Premier League now, and with your Premier League club, there's money there to go and buy players. But it is difficult. I think it's difficult for all clubs with the money in the Premier League. But we keep doing our best, and we've got some excellent coaches at the club from foundation phase all the way through to the under-21s who work very hard with the players on a daily basis to try and not just make them better footballers, but as I said before, to become better young people, which I think in the long term, that's what we aim to be, or that's what we aim for them to be. Just better young people, which will hopefully, if they don't make it in the professional game, they go out would be a good person, really. Like I said, we've done that really well over the last 10 or 15 years, so we keep trying to do our best to produce players from our area, really.
In the academy structure, is there a particular development focus? I mean, some academies focus on 1v1 domination. There are others who put a great emphasis on possession. Is there a particular balance that it's tipped towards at Borough?
We have our own philosophy. We know we like to play out. We like to play from the back. We like to play through the thirds. Especially at a younger age, we try and get them to do that. Obviously, when they move into the 18s and the 21s, we still want them to do that, but they could be going to the first team environment the following week. The young player might get picked out and go to the first team environment, so he's got to make good decisions at the right time when he's on the ball. So if he's under pressure, he's got to put him behind the full backs over the top of the centre half set. He's got to do that. So we're trying to learn them to make good decisions when they're on the ball. But if we can play and we want to play through, we'll play through. Like I say, we work on a cycle at the club. We work on, for 1 week it's cross, it's passing, receiving, offensive support, then defending, final third player, game understanding, and so on, really. So we try and give give the lads a variety of aspects of the game that they can learn and get better on, really.
How do the methods and styles used at the academy now compare to your days as an academy player?
Well, when I was at Leeds, I did the laundry, I did the corridors, I did boots. If it wasn't done right, I was there till 6 o'clock before I got sent home to walk up to my digs at Beeston, which might have been dark, which was a mile and a half away. These days, you get a couple of jobs to do, but it's not as demanding as in our day. You get a lot done for them. They get an awful lot done for them, which I think happens in most academies. Which I think they've still got to learn to do things for themselves. I think we do too much for them. But I think that's part and parcel of the game now is the way it's gone. We're trying to give them responsibility in certain ways. Because they've got to have responsibility. If you don't have responsibility, for me, they're going to get nowhere. You've got to put the onus on the player at times and let them make mistakes. Let them learn from mistakes and move on from it, really. But it's certainly when I played, it was certainly a grounding experience. But like I say, they don't do half as much as we used to do. So it's a change. It's a different environment now because. Obviously we category one, so we have day release now, so some of the lads from under-11s to under-16s come into the club on day release once or twice a week, so they get time into the club and they get taught lessons in the club as well, so it's a totally different environment from when I was a youth team player.
What about session structures and session focuses? Is that significantly different to when you were coming through, or is it really the same sort of stuff still being taught to the players?
I think it's the same sort of stuff, really, but we're taught in a different way. Like I said before, we have a cycle of topics we work through for 6 weeks, but I think that the foundation phase we're working on for 12 weeks, obviously like pass receiving and supports for 2 weeks in the foundation phase and in the youth development phase. Then obviously it's playing through, final third, game understanding and defending for 5 weeks. Then we have a review week at the end of them 5 weeks. But it's relatively, you work on it, but it's all structured now. I think in our day you went out and you worked on, say you did a possession book, but it wasn't based around anything. It was just about keeping the ball and kind of winning the ball back quickly once you lose the ball. And you kind of learned as you went along, really. But I think a lot these days, there's a lot. I don't know whether some coaches kind of do work on their own way. Some coaches stop the session and go in and coach. Some people wait to the end of 5 minutes and go in and give the lads a break and talk through the session. A lot of coaches do differently now. But I was lucky at least. I had Dick Bate. It was before Paul Hardcombe. I had Dick Bate. It was a fantastic coach. Way beyond his years when he was at Leeds. We had video analysis on a Monday morning. We used to get our games recorded on a Saturday up at Fulham Park. Dick used to have us watching them on a Monday. And obviously, Dick went on to have a fantastic career in coaching, obviously working with the FA and working all over the country and all over the world, really. So I was lucky in a way. I got taught by a very good coach, which all coaches are different. All people are different. So people coach in different ways. I don't know whether people's trying to make everybody be robots now and do it the same way, but you've got to be an individual when you coach. You've got to coach the way you coach. You can't have somebody come and tell you how to coach, because you'll end up like a robot and people doing the same things day in and out, and you can't have that. You've got to let players have a freedom to go and express themselves. And if you've got to tap into players every now and then and help them along and do that, but you've got to let players express themselves and make decisions and make mistakes for themselves and hopefully learn from that better than a coach going in every 30 seconds and telling them what to do, really.
Yeah, I firmly believe that the more you coach or the longer you coach, the more of you actually comes through, and there's no hiding who you are.
No, exactly. I think as a young player getting coached, the worst thing you need is the session getting stopped every 2 minutes, somebody to come in and tell you this and tell you that. You just want to play. You want to go out there. You make mistakes, but maybe it's after the session or during the session, you have a water break, or you have a discussion with the lads and try and help them along with it. I don't know, question answer thing, or let them do it themselves, or. But you've got to let them make mistakes and learn from mistakes and just give them minds themselves. They can go out there and do what they want for a while and let them play instead of just dictating how they should play and what they should do all the time. As the level goes up, the age goes up, then you've got to be a bit more structured and obviously a bit more. You've got to be a bit more demanding of the players because they might be in the first team when they come into the youth team or 21s. They might go in the first team and. Our manager works a certain way. He wants the players to play a certain way and in a system, so you've got to be prepared for that. So as they're working up the ages, you've got to prepare them for coming at the building full time and the demands of that, really. But I think as a young player, you should just be there and guided a bit in the sessions and helped along, but let them play and let them enjoy it, because I think that's what I enjoy, just playing football and learning from mistakes, and hopefully I won't do it again. If a player keeps making the same mistakes, then that might be his level. He might not be able to move on from that. That might be his level in football. But the better players, the great players, make more right decisions than they make wrong decisions. So I think that's the way I would do it.
You just mentioned a minute ago Dick Bate and the FA. Recently, they released the England DNA document. Has that had any influence in the way that Middlesbrough are working with young players? Has it had any effect at all?
Yeah, we obviously a lot of our, we go on coaching courses with the FA. We learn a great deal from the FA courses. Some we take back to our club, and some stuff we already do there. So obviously, Dave Barnaby is a well-renowned, a well-respected academy manager throughout the country and throughout. Throughout Europe, so Dave's always open to new ideas and new ways of working. We always listen to whatever everybody's got to say, but I think we're trying to do it our way, out the Middlesbrough way, what we have done for the last 10 or 15 years, and we don't want to take that away from what we do. But if something comes along and we listen and we learn and we take it our sessions and it helps our players, then great, that's fantastic. We always open at the club to. For new ideas, if it's going to get the best out of our players, of course we are. We're not going to shut the door or anything like that. We want our players to become better players and better people. That's what it's about. And producing players, not just for our football club, but for the game in general, which we have done over the last 10 or 15 years.
Okay. Futsal has squeezed its way into the England DNA, and I have a particular interest in futsal. And for me, it actually kind of started with Middlesbrough and Janino's time at the club. Is futsal used within the academy at all?
Yeah, I've just done my level 2 futsal course. We just finished that, so we had I think it was 12 of us did it from the foundation phase all the way up to the professional development phase. So we've started doing our futsal courses now. So we've all, I think it was 12 of us, got level 1 and level 2. So the foundation phase, obviously just youth development phase, they implement futsal into their sessions, and we haven't got the proper surface at the club at the moment, but we try and implement certain ways of futsal work, and the tempo of it at times, and the quick play, and obviously futsal's a lot of individual 1v1s to try and score goals, and quick passing and quick movement, so we try and incorporate all that into the game. But yeah, we've took futsal on. Well, we had Ian Bateman who come and took our course at the club. Ian's obviously works for the FA, and he's an excellent coach, so yeah, we took it on board at Middlesbrough. But like I said before, if it's going to help our players, we definitely do stuff like that. Yeah,
okay, great. I have one final question for you, and it's to do with the ugly side of academy work and releasing players. I don't know how involved you are in that side of things, or if someone else does that. But the media love a story about players being released for being too small and then going on to achieve great things. And they make it seem like it happens a lot. How often does that sort of thing actually really genuinely happen.
Release of play for being small?
Yeah, too small, not strong enough, that sort of thing.
In our club, it rarely happens, for if it ever happens, I don't think. It's for release of play for being too small at a young age. We've got a lot of little players who were technically excellent, who were only little tots, and it's like under 9s and the 10s all the way through. And at under 16s, even under 18s, we've got two small players who were really tiny, who were physically not developed yet, but they technically, they've got a chance. So we don't look at them just because they're small and they're playing against physical players every week and they're going to get bashed about. But we take that into consideration when we play the players. We don't want to play a player who's playing against a 6 foot and he's 4 foot and he's going to get kicked all over the place. We might play him down a year just to get him used to the physical side of it. Then as the season goes on, the coaches might put him back up just to put him in and out and trying to get used to the physical side of it. And I think if he's I think especially in the foundation phase or youth development phase, if he's playing at his age and his physical body's not adapted well to playing against big lads, and he's not on the ball enough, and he's just going through the game, he's had many touches, I think then we've got to look at playing him down. So if he's a technically gifted player, he's got to see the ball, he's got to have the ball. And if he's playing up at the same age and he's not having any of the ball, he's not going to develop for me. So we look at playing players down. See if he's under 14, we might play him down under 13s, just to get him on the ball and get playing football and get his confidence up and learn to deal with tackles and the physical side of the game. But I think as the months go on, the season goes on, yeah, we put him up with us. I don't think there's any cases where we release the boy who's been too small. I've had a lot of players over the years who's gone on to have good careers who were really small in the foundation phase and youth development phase, but had a really good growth at youth level. So I think people say that now. I don't agree with it. I think that's probably a myth. Maybe it happened a few years ago, but no more. I don't think coaches are naive now to release little just players just because the physical size is not what it should be at that time. I don't think that happens for me anymore. I can't speak for other clubs, but definitely not our club, I don't think.
Okay, brilliant, thank you. That's sort of what I was getting at, because people say it and talk about it, but does it really happen now? Is it a myth? And you've answered that, really.
I think it is a myth.
Right, so before we finish, do you want to plug your social media, your Twitter?
No, I'm fine. I just go on every now and then. I'm not really a social media freak, so I'm
alright. Alright, so I've really enjoyed speaking here today. I'd love to have you on again in the future.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. Cheers.
Okay, well, thank
thanks,
you.
Mark.